Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The U.S. military seizure of Venezuelan oil tankers and the naval blockade of the coast is being called piracy by many countries in the world. Analysis of the legality of U.S. actions by Cecilia Helfstedt, an expert on international law in Norway. Is the U.S. attempting to drive away other nations from influence in South America? Trump appointed a special envoy to Greenland. He is repeating the call for the U.S. to take over the island. A report and some analysis by DW's Terry Schultz, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Russia has expressed full support for Venezuela's socialist president, Nicolas Maduro. It comes ahead of an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council at the request of Venezuela. U.S. President Donald Trump has been ramping up pressure on Maduro, saying it would be smart for him to step down. The United States blockade of oil tankers is fueling anger.
Crowds have gathered in the streets of Caracas as Venezuelans show defiance against the U.S. military buildup and naval blockade of the country's coast. Venezuela is accusing the U.S. of piracy after its maritime blockade and seizure of oil tankers in the Caribbean Sea.
We condemn those who steal oil from Venezuelans because it is ours.
We are here today to tell the world that we are here to defend our homeland in any circumstance and at any time that may arise.
Venezuela's President Maduro suggested that Donald Trump should focus on the U.S.'s own problems.
I have been reflecting in recent days on the illegal aggressions that have occurred. I think that President Trump could do better in his country and in the world. He would do better within his country on economic and social issues. He would do better if he attended to the issues of his country. Because it cannot be that 70% of his speeches, declarations, and time are about Venezuela.
Trump, for his part, warned Venezuela's president.
We have a massive armada formed, the biggest we've ever had, and by far the biggest we've ever had in South America. He can do whatever he wants. It's all right. Whatever he wants to do. If he wants to do something, if he plays tough, it'll be the last time he's ever able to play tough.
U.S. is increasing its pressure on Venezuela. Military aircrafts were seen operating in recent days at a naval station in Puerto Rico. And a seized oil tanker was seen off the coast of Texas. As a response, the Venezuelan Assembly introduced a so-called anti-piracy bill. Officials in Caracas restated their commitment to peace, unless the country's sovereignty, territorial integrity, and resources are jeopardized.
Joining us now from Oslo is Cecilia Helfstedt. She's an expert on international law at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. On what legal grounds can a state seize a foreign oil tanker in international waters?
Well, there are several legal grounds that could be used. Now, the Trump administration has been resorting to a somewhat unusual approach by which they were in September declaring self-defense against narco terrorists, and then in October declaring a non-international armed conflict between the U.S. and entities that they called narco terrorists. And in November, they basically placed a group on this list led by Maduro, according to the Americans. So the Americans are basically claiming a type of war legal basis under the laws of armed conflict. And this is something that is provoking a lot of other states because they're very worried about the precedents that the United States may put on this. Now, the situation really escalated on the 16th of December when the Americans announced a naval blockade. Now, a naval blockade may be a measure that states resort to when there is an armed conflict, or under international law, such a naval blockade may be also interpreted as a declaration of war. So the Americans are really swimming in a rather dangerous waters when it comes to the type of legal argumentation that they are resorting to.
Because this is not a military campaign, according to the U.S. The Trump administration says the crackdown on U.S. sanctioned tankers is legal. How do you see that?
No, the U.S. administration are currently involved in what you could call a very inventive acrobatics of international law. They are they're relying partly on immigration legislation, partly on counter-drug legislation, and partly on counter-terrorism legislation. And they have taken this up into international waters under something that the Trump administration claims is the unwilling and unable doctrine under international law. Now, the U.S. is basically suggesting that these attacks against boats has to do with the fact that the countries from which these boats come are unwilling and unable to do something about it, and therefore this is basically giving the U.S. self-defense. Now, when it comes to the tankers, the situation is somewhat different because this is part of an international sanction regime that the U.S. has been pushing against Venezuela for a long time. And now these two kind of different questions concerning narco traffic and narco terrorists, as the U.S. administration is calling them, and the sanctions against Venezuelan petroleum tankers or the shadow fleet is kind of becoming one single conflict. And that is quite dangerous because at that moment it might escalate into a situation between the U.S. and the Venezuelan state. And that would then
be an armed
conflict. So what
do you see coming next? What do you expect from the U.N. Security Council, for example?
Now, the Venezuelans have called for this meeting and they have gotten the Russians and the Chinese on board. And I think that for the Chinese, I mean, the petroleum that is now being blocked outside of the coast of Venezuela, this is oil going to China. So China has a vested interest in this issue. Now, the Russians, they have also been conducting increasingly over the past couple of 5-6 years, maritime exercises together with South American countries. And there seems to be this increased attempt by the U.S. administration, also in light of this new Trump Monroe corollary doctrine, trying to get other nations out of Latin America and basically to state for everyone that this is the backyard of the U.S. Now, that, of course, is something that a lot of countries, not merely in Latin America, but around the world, is really, really concerned about. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that the meeting tonight and the next weeks is going really to be a question about to what extent other states in Latin America and around the world will mobilize against that push by the American administration.
And we will be following those developments closely. Cecilia Hellestveit in Oslo, thank you very much for your time.
Denmark says it will summon the U.S. ambassador over the appointment of a special envoy to Greenland, warning Washington to respect its sovereignty. The governor of Louisiana has been given the new post for the autonomous Danish territory. He has repeated Trump's call for the U.S. to take over the island.
Dragged out of hibernation and back under the gaze of Donald Trump, Greenland has returned to the forefront of the U.S. president's mind. More specifically, his desire to take control of the Danish territory. Trump announced on social media that he was appointing Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry as special envoy to Greenland. Landry immediately responded by vowing he would work to make Greenland a part of the U.S. The appointment and Landry's statement have triggered outrage in Denmark and Greenland.
Out of nowhere, there's now a special U.S. presidential representative who, according to the envoy himself, is tasked with taking over Greenland. This is, of course, completely unacceptable.
Trump has made no secret of his desire to make Greenland part of the United States. He has repeatedly said the island is essential to U.S. national security and shown a keen interest in its rich deposits of minerals. But while Greenlanders largely support independence from Denmark, polls have also shown an overwhelming majority have no interest in becoming part of the US.
They can forget all about that. Greenland must be independent outside of the US, Russia and all major nations.
I don't know what Trump thinks about Greenland. He just keeps going. I find it hard to see what his intention is with this.
The governments of both Denmark and Greenland are adamant that the island is not for sale. But Trump has refused to rule out using force to take what he wants, even from a NATO ally.
DW's Terry Schultz joins us from Brussels. Terry, tell us about the reactions you're seeing to Trump's move.
Yes, we've seen reactions coming in throughout the day, starting, of course, with Danish and Greenlandic officials, the prime ministers of Greenland and Denmark, putting out a joint statement saying that national borders and sovereignties are matters of international law and that you, United States, cannot simply annex another country. The reactions have spread across the Nordic countries, with the Norwegian and Swedish foreign ministers putting out statements saying they stand 100% behind Denmark, and Finnish Foreign Minister Elina Valtonen even putting out a rather lengthy statement on social media saying that she notes the sacrifices that Denmark has made in its friendship with the United States. Casualties, for example, in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, where Denmark has served alongside U.S. soldiers. And I even had a chance to ask the European Commission at its very last briefing of the year, Ben, the spokesman there giving a very terse, basically one-sentence answer, saying that the territorial integrity of the Kingdom of Denmark, which of course includes Greenland, is a matter that is essential for the European Union.
So will this appointment of a special envoy by the US president reignite tensions over this whole issue?
Well, it's not only the appointment of an envoy, but of course those remarks that you said, that he intends to work hard on making Greenland part of the United States. That's the real outrage. And of course, the concern is, and we already see it happening, even with my own question to the European Commission, that this is going to bring Trump back into that cycle where he says that, yes, Greenland has to become part of the United States, and that he will not rule out using force to make that happen. Remember those months of very high tension with Denmark and that trip that Vice President J.D. Vance made to Greenland, where basically the local population turned their backs on him because it was so uncomfortable for them. I think that Denmark quite rightfully is afraid that this is going to start another cycle of those kinds of statements, which of course are very worrisome for an ally.
Thank you very much. Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, as well as most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. Next, France 24. French President Macron has slammed the visa ban against the former EU commissioner and four others because they have pushed for legislation to combat hate speech and disinformation online. Macron visited French troops in the United Arab Emirates, where he announced France will build a new nuclear aircraft carrier. The United Arab Emirates is the largest buyer of French weapons. France 24.
French President Emmanuel Macron has slammed a U.S. visa ban against former European Union Commissioner Thierry Breton and four others, saying that it showed a desire by Washington to intimidate and challenge Europe's digital sovereignty. Breton helped drive EU legislation that's recently targeted top U.S. tech companies. Gabrielle Nadler has the story.
The Trump administration is taking its attacks on Europe from words into action. On Tuesday, the U.S. government announced visa bans on five Europeans who it accused of working to suppress American accounts on social media. The most prominent person targeted is former EU Commissioner Thierry Breton, considered a key architect of the Digital Services Act, or DSA, by the State Department. The landmark European legislation is meant to combat hate speech and disinformation online, but Washington argues it restricts free speech.
For far too long, ideologues in Europe have led organized efforts to coerce American platforms to punish American viewpoints they oppose. The Trump administration will no longer tolerate these egregious acts of extraterritorial censorship.
The DSA has become a frequent target of U.S. conservatives who see it as a weapon of censorship against right-wing thought in Europe and beyond, an accusation the EU furiously denies. Breton compared the visa bans to American political repression in the late 40s and 50s under Senator Joseph McCarthy.
Is McCarthy's witch hand back? As a reminder, 19% of the European Parliament, our democratically elected body, and all 27 member states unanimously voted the DSA. To our American friends, censorship isn't where you think it is.
The five Europeans targeted were identified by Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy Sarah Rogers on X. Aside from Breton, they include higher-ups at organizations working to counter digital hate and disinformation. Along with the DSA, the U.S. has gone after the U.K.'s equivalent Online Safety Act. Last week, Washington suspended a tech cooperation deal with Britain, citing opposition to the country's online regulations.
Sharing a Christmas meal is part of the traditional year-end holiday celebrations with French soldiers. This year, the French president is in the United Arab Emirates, and he had a major announcement to make.
We must be strong to be feared, and especially strong at sea. In accordance with the two last military programming laws, and after a thorough and careful review, I have decided to equip France with a new aircraft carrier.
The move will replace the aging Charles de Gaulle, the only nuclear-powered aircraft carrier outside the U.S. Navy. The new vessel, which is expected to enter service in 2038, will be bigger than its predecessor and able to carry 2,000 soldiers. Macron says the project will boost France's industrial base and generate sizable business. French arms companies are also pleased the president chose to visit Abu Dhabi. The UAE has been the largest buyer of French weaponry over the last decade, a strategic partnership, as the president acknowledged in his address to the troops.
Our Emirati comrades know this. In times of crisis, they can count on France. Thanks to the actions of the French forces here, France holds a unique position in the Middle East.
The UAE is also an important partner in the fight against drug trafficking, a priority for the French president as he seeks extradition for some 15 suspected dealers wanted by France.
Those reports were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. On to NHK Japan. North Korea is building a nuclear-powered submarine, and South Korea has made an agreement with the U.S. to also build one. Thailand and Cambodia have agreed to resume ceasefire talks. Greta Thunberg was arrested in London for holding a sign saying, "I support Palestine action prisoners. I oppose genocide." NHK Japan.
North Korean media have reported that the country's leader Kim Jong-un has inspected the construction of a nuclear-powered submarine. Kim is also said to have criticized South Korea's plan to build a similar vessel. State-run Korean Central Television reported on Thursday that Kim visited the site where an 8,700-ton nuclear-powered strategic guided missile submarine is being built. A nuclear-powered submarine is one of the goals in Pyongyang's five-year national defense plan that ends this year. Kim reportedly stressed the significance of the sub for the country's defense. At the same time, he said Washington's approval of Seoul possessing nuclear-powered submarines would increase instability around the Korean Peninsula. Thailand and Cambodia have resumed ceasefire talks. The move comes after fighting between the two countries broke out again this month. The meeting began Wednesday near the border. Defense ministers from both sides are expected to participate on Saturday. The countries had agreed to restart truce talks at a meeting of ASEAN foreign ministers on Monday in Malaysia. Border clashes have left more than 40 people, including civilians, dead and forcing the evacuation of over 700,000 others. Observers say it remains uncertain whether the talks will make any progress. Police in London have detained Swedish activist Greta Thunberg for supporting a pro-Palestinian group banned in the UK. British media report that Thunberg was detained on Tuesday for holding a sign supporting Palestine Action. The group has shown solidarity with Palestinians and organized protests. The UK government designated Palestine Action a terrorist group in July after members broke into an airbase and sprayed paint on military aircraft. British authorities say supporting the group is illegal. Earlier this year, Thunberg was part of two efforts to deliver aid supplies to Gaza by boat, but Israel intercepted her vessel and deported her on both occasions.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may also be easily found at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this show, my PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I am truly grateful for the donations, which are essential for the weekly production and distribution of this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations around the world. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The Israeli Security Cabinet has given final approval to another 19 illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Israel's so-called Security Cabinet has given the final approval to a highly controversial project of 19 new settlements, illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank, despite international condemnation and growing calls for a halt to settlement activity. The proposal by Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich and Israel Katz, the Minister for Military Affairs of Israel, said they would declare and formalize 19 new settlements in the West Bank that have been approved by the cabinet. The office of the far-right Israeli finance minister, Solovich, announced in a statement on Sunday. The hawkish minister yesterday further said that the move was aimed at preventing the establishment of a Palestinian state. On the ground, he said, we are blocking a Palestinian terror state. from being created. Shalmati's office said that 19 new approved settlements are located in what he described as strategic areas, highly strategic areas, adding that two of them in the northern West Bank would be reestablished after being dismantled 20 years ago. Five of the 19 settlements already existed, but had not previously been granted legal status under Israeli law. The statement said that the decision will bring the total number of settlements approved over the past 3 years to at least 69. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has condemned Israel's relentless expansion of settlements in the occupied territory. The latest approvals come days after the United Nations said that the expansion of Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank had reached its highest level since 2017, when the world body began tracking the data on illegal settlements. These figures, they said, represent a sharp increase compared to previous years. Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, noted that an average of 12,815 housing units were added annually between 2017 and 2022. These developments, he said, are further entrenching the unlawful Israeli occupation, violating international law, and undermining the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. He said they continue to have fuel tensions, impede access by Palestinians to their own land, threaten the viability of a fully independent, democratic, contiguous, and sovereign Palestinian state. In September, Shalmatich, the right-wing minister, announced plans to annex more than 80% of the occupied West Bank. The Israeli right-wing minister called for the West Bank's annexation as a preventive step against moves by many countries to recognize Palestinian statehood. Since the beginning of the Israeli genocidal war in the besieged Gaza Strip, calls for the establishment of a Palestinian state have proliferated. Many Western countries now moving to formally recognize Palestine. Longtime Western allies of Israel, including Belgium, France, the UK, Canada, and Australia, have recognized Palestinian statehood during a UN General Assembly session in September. They joined 147 other nations that had already formally recognized Palestine. Israel has occupied the West Bank since 1967. Violence there has soared since the Israeli genocidal war in Gaza began in earnest in October 2023.
That report was from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website's working well most of the time at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at 6000. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report's been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury and staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.